Still learning Creole. We have a verse here, chosen by the great sage and saintly person, His Grace Krishna Chandra Prabhu. It is Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, Text 11. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishna Chandra Prabhu has selected chapter 4, verse 11. Yeyatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham mamavartmanu vartante manushya partha sarvasha. Translation: as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. And we will read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Everyone understands English okay? What should I say? Put your hand up if you don't understand what I'm saying. No, not that. But do you think everyone understands? Most? Okay. So Srila Prabhupada says, everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of His manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in His impersonal Brahma-jyoti effulgence. And as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms, that Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally, according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal, blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material world to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yajneshwara. And those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone. And all kinds of spiritual processes are at different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect. As is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10, akama sarvakamava mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param, which means, whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should, with all efforts, try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. I'll read the verse again. Ye yatama prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamavartma vartante manushya patha sarvasha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. te Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschitya Dejitarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is very important verse and very interesting verse in Bhagavad Gita, because Lord Krishna is explaining that in one sense at least everyone is trying to approach him, but it just depends on how they see him, or not see him really, but how they conceive of him. They may have this idea or that idea, or so many ideas may be there. When Lord Krishna entered the wrestling arena in Mathura, are you familiar with that story? You know that story? In Nouvelle France? Lord Krishna was invited by Kamsa to come to Mathura to take part in a big wrestling match. So, Krishna left Vrindavan, actually. This is when Krishna left Vrindavan. And he went to Mathura, and of course, like so many things in Krishna consciousness, it is a long story, but eventually he and Balaram entered the wrestling arena to fight with the two big wrestlers. What were their names? Chanura and Mushtika, yeah? Mushtika. Okay. So, now, there were different types of people, and even different types of devotees, and different types of people in the audience there at the wrestling arena, and they were watching as Krishna and Balaram entered the arena. Some of those people, well, some were devotees, some were in a parental type of relationship with Krishna. This is how they understood Krishna, how they thought of Krishna. So when they saw Krishna and Balaram entering the wrestling arena in that parental, protective mood, they saw two little boys, innocent little boys, just walking out in the arena like just little pictures of innocence. And those parental devotees felt very bad. Poor little Krishna and Balaram, these little boys. They have to fight these huge wrestlers. This is terrible. They really felt like that. Some of the cowherd boys were there from Vrindavan. And they have a different type of relationship with Krishna and Balaram. Friendly, Sakyaras. So they're used, well, as we saw in this great dramatic performance a little while ago. Did you see that when Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys went out there in the forest, some of them fought together? Did you see that in the drama? Whoa, big fight. So, you know, they're like these rough, tough boys. You know, we're not scared of anything. So now they see Krishna and Balaram coming out in the wrestling arena, and those cowherd boys cheered them. Yes, go for it. Wipe them out. That was their mood. Smash the rascals. Different mood. There were some, not gopis actually, but some of the young girls of Mathura. They were also in the audience, sort of teenage or whatever. Younger girls. And they saw Krishna and Balaram as the most handsome young fellows. Just completely, you know, what would you say, debonair and just very attractive in that sense. And they were becoming sort of dizzy with attraction to Krishna in that conjugal type of mood. That these two are just the most beautiful boys we ever saw. Then there were, let's see, there were the two wrestlers, Chanura and Mushtika. They saw Krishna and Balaram in terms of the indirect rasas. That again is, that's all, another long story, we won't go into all the details, but they are indirect rasas like astonishment, like humility, and like this. So, and ghastliness, something's very shocking. So when the wrestlers saw Krishna and Balaram, they saw them to be like death personified. These two dangerous, like man mountains, coming to just destroy them. And they were really taken aback. They were frightened. There were some Paramatma realized yogis in the audience. Prabhupada in the purport talks about people like that. So there were some in the audience. When they saw Krishna and Balaram walking out into the arena, they saw these two four-armed forms. Because that's how they understand, how they conceive of, or even in their cases, how they have realized Krishna and Balaram. So they saw these two like super souls floating across the wrestling arena. There were some impersonalists, Mayavadi types, or impersonalists at least. They're different types of impersonalists. Impersonalists mean, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, they don't accept God as being a person. They think he's, well, some light, some energy, or something of that sort. And not a person. So, these impersonalists, as they were watching, Krishna and Balaram were walking out in the arena, they didn't see Krishna and Balaram. They saw these two lights. Can you imagine? It's like two light bulbs floating through the air out into the wrestling arena. Yes. Because that was their conception of Krishna and Balaram, of God. Then, to top it all off, there were some people, they were like Buddhists. Of course, they were not actually Buddhists, because Buddha only appeared later, 2,500 years ago or thereabouts. But they, even at that time, before Buddha, there were people who held basically the same philosophy, a nihilistic shunyavad philosophy. Shunya means nothing, as you probably are aware. So, shunyavad. Vad means knowledge. So as far as they're concerned, the Buddhists, or these people, their technical term, name is the Shanik Vijnana Vadis. That is what they were referred to in those days. Now they're just called Buddhists. So those people who feel that nothing exists, I don't exist, you don't exist. What do you think of that? La Nouvelle France does not exist. Nothing exists. This is shunyavad. Nothing exists. Even the idea that nothing exists does not exist. Yes, it's a fact. This is their idea. So they were watching. Krishna and Balaram were walking out into the arena. They were watching. What did they see? They saw nothing. They saw nothing. Because there's no God, he doesn't exist. So, Srila Prabhupada is discussing this in the purport, that different people who have different ideas about God, they think of him in different ways. Some people realize him in different ways. Other people, they don't really realize, but they have different conceptions. So we mentioned about the Paramatma realized yogis. And we mentioned about the impersonalists. They realize the Brahman feature. Brahman means Krishna's effulgence. So Jiva Goswami actually describes in Paramatma Sandarbha that people who realize Brahman, they are actually realizing Krishna, but minus his form and minus his personality. When you take away the form of Krishna and you take away the personality, so to speak, but Krishna is still there, but you took away the form and personality, what's left is the effulgence, that impersonal spiritual energy of Krishna. And the Paramatma realized yogis, those who realize the super soul, they're also realizing Krishna. But it is Krishna. His form is there. Form is there. Four-armed form. They see. Four-armed form. But not his personality. Because that super soul, Paramatma form of the Lord within the heart, and within every atom actually in this world, he is simply guiding people in terms of their karma. If it is your karma, just an example, if it is your karma, if you are driving on the road, if it is your karma to take the wrong turn and get lost, then Krishna within your heart, he will put the idea into your mind, suddenly, boom, turn right, don't turn left, turn right. So you turn right, it's the wrong way to turn. You see, he makes sure that you get your karma. If it's your karma to take the wrong turning, which it may well be sometimes. So he arranges, if someone performs any activity, material activity, sinful, pious, sort of mixed, whatever, then he arranges that you get the reactions. If you are a sinful person and you do so many bad things, so now, in your next life, or in the future sometime, you are meant to get some bad things happen to you. You lose your money, and then maybe you lose your family, and so on like that. Maybe you do some crime, you get locked up in jail. So he arranges that you get what you deserve. And it is not in doing that. If he says, okay, you killed someone, so now you be killed, and suddenly, bang, someone kills you. So it is not like an expression of dislike on his part. If he says, okay, let him be killed, and bang, he is killed. It is not an expression of hatred or, you know, he doesn't like this person, so he wants them killed. He's just arranging. Oh, look, it is his karma to be killed. Okay, kill him. That's all. So, in other words, his personality is not really involved. He has no real personal feelings. Someone, one day, Krishna, it's the person's karma, Krishna says, okay, let him get $1,000,000. And the next day, Krishna looks at his karmic list and says, oh, he is meant to lose $1,000,000 today. So the next day, he loses $1,000,000. It's not that the day he saw that the man got $1,000,000, Krishna was feeling, what a nice guy. Wow, let him have $1,000,000. But the next day he thought, well, actually, I don't like this guy any longer. Let's take away his $1,000,000. You know, I read something, it was a couple of years ago now. One man won a lottery in America. He won $130 million. I don't think. Between all of us here, do we have $130 million? If any of you do, we want to build the temple out here. So he won $130 million. And, well, you can imagine. Who expects to win the lottery? Now, don't buy lottery tickets, okay? Because it's not part of Krishna consciousness. But you can imagine how he reacted. Wow, $130 million. He must have thought, you know, this is my lucky day. The rest of my life is just going to be fantastic. So, but what happened was that he got into bad company. You know, he started trying to enjoy life, eat, drink, and be merry, and so on. And he started drinking too much. And he got into a fight, and he killed someone. So this report was actually on CNN, on the internet. It was the man's wife was explaining all these things. The man was sentenced to death, and she was now being interviewed. And she said that, actually, I wish he had not won that money. We were not wealthy at all, but we were alive. Life was going on before. But as soon as he won that money, everything went down, and just see. Now he's going to be killed in a few days. So the super soul is just seeing that we get what we deserve. And he is not emotionally involved, you could say. He's not emotionally involved. He just sees, okay, you get good, you get bad, you get something else, that's all. But his form is there. So when you see, if a person sees the super soul, they're seeing Krishna, including his form, but not his personality. His personality is displayed in his Bhagavan form, the full form of Krishna in Vrindavan. This is the full realization of Krishna and full manifestation of Krishna. But it is not that the impersonalists, when they see that effulgence, it is not that they are not seeing Krishna. They are seeing Krishna, but minus his form and minus his personality. As you may know, if you have read Sri Ishapanishad, in the last few verses, the speaker is appealing to the Lord, please remove your dazzling effulgence so I can see your form. So the thing is, you know, there are different perspectives on all these concepts, but in this context, the thing is that in order to see through the effulgence and see the form, you need to have certain types of eyes. If you have the eyes of an impersonalist, that type of vision does not have the shakti or the capability to penetrate through the effulgence and see Krishna behind the effulgence. So therefore they only see the effulgence. But Krishna is behind it. But the devotees, because they have premanjana charita bhakti valochinena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti, the devotees, because their eyes are anointed with the ointment of love, prema anjana, that ointment of love, therefore they can see through the effulgence and they see, ah, there's Krishna. And, you know, for example, in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's pastimes are going on and everything is going on and the cowherd boys are playing with Krishna and the gopis are dancing with Krishna and so on. It is not that that form of Krishna does not have an effulgence. That form of Krishna is fully effulgent. If you were an impersonalist and you happened to see that, you would just see this incredible effulgence. Not like, you know, not like this light here, but this most amazing, overwhelming, dazzling effulgence, and you wouldn't see Krishna. Yeah. But because their eyes are anointed with this ointment of love, they don't even see the effulgence. It's not that they're conscious that there's the effulgence and, oh, we're looking through, oh, there he is, through the effulgence. It's not like that. They don't even see the effulgence. They just see Krishna because they have those eyes. And as for people in the material world, what do they see? Well, you know, they don't really see anything. I mean, in the sense, They only see the material bodies. They don't see Krishna within the hat like this. Yes, so these impersonalists, then super soul realized yogis, and then the pure devotees, they're all seeing the same Krishna. But because of the differences in consciousness, they're seeing the same Krishna in different ways. And just like in Goloka Vrindavan, or here in Vrindavan on this planet, when Lord Krishna was performing his pastimes, at night, well, Mother Yashoda would put him to bed, seeing him as her little boy, just little, like, well, I was told every lady, every mother, sees her children as her little boys and little girls. Is that right? Even when they're old, you know, like I'm almost 60, my mother is 91. She still calls me by some little pet names. Only her, nobody else, because she's my mother. But anyway, I heard this. So Mother Yashoda. Now Krishna at this point, he is, you know, he doesn't age really beyond 10 or 11, or he looks like he's 16. But in her eyes, he's little Krishna. Her little Krishna. She puts him to bed, pats him on the head. Be a good boy. Go to sleep. And Krishna says, Mata, tell me a bedtime story, otherwise I can't sleep. So Mother Yashoda tells him a bedtime story. Like, once, Mother Yashoda says, well, she tells him stories about his own incarnations. Once, there was a little boy named Prahlad. And Krishna says, yes. And Mother Yashoda says that, and he was a very nice devotee. And Krishna says, yes. And Mother Yashoda says, but his father was a big demon. And Krishna says, yes. And Mother Yashoda says, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared and killed the father and tore him to pieces. And Krishna said, really? And he smiled. He said, tell me that story again. Rupa Goswami describes this, actually. And another one, Mother Yashoda tells Krishna that once there was a very nice, there was a very nice king named Ram. And Krishna says, yes. And he had a very wonderful and beautiful and chaste wife named Sita. Yes. But a demon named Ravana came and kidnapped Sita. Suddenly Krishna became shocked. He's lying in the bed. Krishna jumped up and he shouted, Lakshman, bring my bow! He entered into it. Rupa Goswami describes this in Padyavali. And Mother Yashoda said, Krishna, lie down. What's this nonsense you're talking? And Krishna said, oh, sorry, okay. He lay down. But anyway, see, Krishna at this point, he's not just that little boy, you know, little preschool boy, just simply a little cuddly bag of lovableness. He's actually like a teenager. But Mother Yashoda doesn't see him like that. So as soon as she puts him to bed and goes out and closes the door, Krishna is out the window, gone, within 30 seconds. He's just on the way out for the rasa dance. So all night he's having the rasa dance, and sometimes the gopis are kissing him, and, you know, things like this. And some marks are left. Like sometimes the gopis wear lipstick. Would you believe it? So, well, you know, another thing they say about ladies, and, you know, of course it is probably not true, but they say ladies love to sit in front of mirrors and decorate their faces. I heard. I'm not saying it. Don't blame me, okay? And you're all devotees, so you wouldn't do. But I heard that. You know, put powder on, different colors, and little dots, and, you know, swirls. And anyway, Hare Krishna. So the gopis do that. They do that. Not because they want to sort of get their man, you know, bewilder him into thinking that they're beautiful until they wash off the makeup and the poor fellow sees, hey, she's just some ordinary looking girl. Anyway, the gopis sometimes use lipstick and it gets on Krishna, you know, on his body. And then Krishna comes back. Krishna comes back just at dawn. Climbs in the window. And, you know, whole night rasa dancing. No, that rasa dancing, that's a serious business. You gotta really get into it. So he's been spinning and just dancing in all sorts of amazing ways the whole night. So he's tired. So Krishna comes in, collapses on his bed, and falls asleep just like that, gone. 5 minutes later, knock on the door. Krishna, time to wake up. It's Mother Yashoda. Time to wake up. You gotta go herding the cows. And Krishna lifts his head off the pillow like, groans something because he's exhausted. And Mother Yashoda looks at him and says, my poor little boy. He was herding the cows so enthusiastically yesterday. Even though he had the whole night to sleep, he's still tired. So she tells him, it's all right. You can take rest for another 5 minutes. and then she comes, and then, you know, when your mother comes, you gotta get up. Sooner or later, you gotta get up. So he has to get up. And she sees all these, like the red marks from his lipstick. And the gopis have gathered, actually, by that time. And she looks at Krishna and she says, you know, you took bath last night. I didn't see these red marks. And the gopis actually bathe Krishna because Mother Yashoda thinks he's just a little boy So the gopis bathe him. And Mother Yashoda turns to the gopis and says, "You girls don't know how to wash someone, do you? You didn't clean off these red mugs. It is from the, you know, they have rocks there which are colored." Actually, if, I don't know if you have them here, but I've seen in Vrindavan some rocks you can take and you wet them and rub them and you get some color. And Mother Yashoda says, "Oh, he must have rubbed against some of those colored rocks yesterday." And the gopis say, "Yes, that's it." But different perspectives. Now, in ordinary material life, people also have perspectives on God. You know, not really for what he is, but for what they think he is. Generally in material life, people think that God is the provider. That every now and then you must pray to God. And praying to God means you provide him with your shopping list. What I want, dear God. Give me a house and a car and a color TV. Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. And give me good health. Give me more money. Give me a better husband. Give me a bigger... Anyway, whatever. This is how people pray to God. So, in their minds, they are thinking. It's a type of conception. They are thinking that this is what he is. Krishna is like a big, free supermarket. Or something like that. And you can just get whatever you want. Other people, they may see Krishna. Well, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, people approach Krishna when they're distressed. He's just someone who can help you get free from distress. You know, I met a man a few years ago now in our temple in Durban. He approached me, he said, Swami, I got headaches, Swami. This is how they speak in Durban. I got headache, Swami. Swami, I got headache. You must pray for me, Swami. Will you pray for me? All right. And I said, "Well, look, you got a headache." "Yes, Swami, I got a headache." I said, "You know, when I get a headache, I take a Disprin." You know what a Disprin is? An aspirin. "When I get a headache, I take a Disprin." And he looked at me like, "What? How can you say that? You're meant to be a Swami. You must pray to God. But Swamis also get headaches sometimes." So his idea is that God, Krishna, is a big aspirin. It's like that, in effect. Yeah. But Krishna, of course, he is what he is. And we may misconceive of him in different ways. It doesn't make him that. It doesn't make him that. It's just our misconception. And through being attached to it, we avoid getting the real mercy that Krishna is able to give. And that real mercy is back home, back to Godhead. Krishna prema, eternal relationship with Krishna, face to face, in the kingdom of God. That is the real mercy. But if we think that, you know, God's position is just to give me material things, and that's what he is, then we are not accessing him very much at all. You know, in Australia, they have the, what they call the Aboriginal people. I don't know what they call themselves, but, you know, the white people call them the Aborigines. It is like a derogatory term. Yeah. You know, like they went to America, they thought it was India. So they called the local people. First of all, they said they discovered it. But the local people were already there, millions of them. And then they thought it was India, so they called them the Indians. What do you think? And they're still called the Indians to this day. Anyway, the thing is, those, the Aboriginal people, the ethnic people in Australia, their religion is, they worship the sun. They take the sun to be God. And they think every night when the sun sets, that the sun dies. And they think it is reborn the next day. This is the traditional Aboriginal idea of God. And the next day the sun rises, of course. And they say, just see, it's proof. You see, we're right. We're right. Our religion is right. So our business as devotees is to try to enlighten people and help them to understand the truth. Who is Krishna? Not that he's simply someone just to fulfill our material desires. Not that he's just an effulgence. Not that he's just controlling everything in this world. You know, when I was just thinking of an example of the super soul giving the results of karma. And sometimes people have good karma and bad karma at the same time. So sometimes you find people in situations which are very good and very bad at the same time. I'll give you an example. Sometimes you see some man driving in his Rolls Royce. You have some Rolls Royces in Mauritius? Yeah? Anyone here? Some Rolls Royces? Not so many in the temple room here, I see. Less than 10? Okay, so there he is. He's driving his Rolls Royce. Sitting in the passenger seat, looking out at the world, surveying everything, is the dog. Yes. He is being chauffeur-driven in a Rolls-Royce. He's not even the driver. He is being chauffeur-driven. Who is being chauffeur-driven in a Rolls-Royce around here? Not many of us. He is being chauffeur-driven in the Rolls-Royce. So we, you know, some of us have probably never even sat in a Rolls-Royce because it's not our karma. But it's his karma, the dog's karma. He's sitting in a Rolls-Royce every day and being chauffeur-driven. And, you know, the owner probably lives in some big house somewhere. And that dog is also living in the big house. And he goes and lies on the sofa in front of the television. You know, he has has all the luxuries of the house. So he's got very good karma, but he's a dog. It's very bad karma. So it's interesting, these mixes of karma. And the super soul is seeing that everyone gets what they deserve. But that is not the only business of Krishna. His real business is to have loving pastimes with his devotees. So if we render devotional service very nicely, then we can achieve that. Gradually, we'll come closer to Krishna and we'll feel that. We'll feel that we're coming closer to Krishna. We'll feel happier and just more conscious of his presence. Gradually, this develops in the life of someone who practices devotional service. And the head becomes clearer, happier and happier. And one day, Krishna will walk up to you in Nouvelle France and shake your hand or embrace you. Yes. Bienvenue, Krishna. Suswagatam. Okay, so I don't actually know what time I meant to finish, but it's approximately time. So, thank you very much for listening very patiently. Merci beaucoup. Any comment or question? Yes, Madhaji. Nice and loud.
Maharaj, the distribution of karma.
Yes. It's going. So the question is, the distribution of karma is going on under material nature or the super soul. Well, Krishna is supervising. It's definitely not just going on under the material nature. It's going on under Yamaraj, who is empowered by the super soul with the power or the understanding of the super soul, to see that all these things are distributed and also evaluated, new karma. And the super soul is watching to make sure Yamaraj doesn't make a mistake, because sometimes he does. Yeah. So he's there as overseer and permitter. Yeah. It's not that he is exactly hands-on, but he is aware. With every little drop of karma, he is aware that you're getting it. And he is aware if you get it properly. And he's ready, if Yamaraj makes a mistake, to intervene directly. Yeah. So the material nature is working like that. And Krishna says that he is there as if neutral. As if neutral. Not, so he's not totally neutral. As if neutral. But he's, you know, it's like a big manager in a business. He may be sitting there, may look like he's doing nothing. But if he's a really competent person, he's got his fingers on everything. And if anything goes wrong, bang, he just can step in just like that. So it's like that. Is that okay? Anyone else? Any other comment or question? Prashna? Question? Okay, thank you all. Srila Prabhupada ki.
David Nicholson. A few weeks back, we had our graduation ceremony for the Baptist Astri graduates. And as it is a custom, we tend to offer love through gift to everybody who help in giving lectures. So that was done a few weeks back. But His Holiness was at Mauritius at that time, about 5 weeks back. So we have a token of love from the Bhaktivedanta College of Education and Culture, Mauritius, for Maharaj. Maharaja taught the last batch at Sri Isha Foundation, and we wish to have Maharaj again. We have just started a new batch now, Maharaj. We don't know how and when.